the product market fit that was validated immediately. No investor was going to care. The path from here to there as an inventory consumer brand is nobody is going to be able to hold the belief to build this business. Just because you built it doesn't mean they come.
Welcome back to the Breakout CEO Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Holman. I'm here today with Megan Higney. Megan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
Yeah, it's great to have you. Megan, I've read a little bit about your background. We've talked just briefly before the show. And you've done a fair number of things, from investing to advising entrepreneurs to now running your own brand. And you said something just moments ago that I kind of want to kick this off. I've got a few other questions that I was excited to ask, but this one pushed itself to the top here. You said that you're creating a brand with message, shoes, right? And how did you put it? You said, where are these shoes taking me? Yeah, I think you said it better than that, though. What was it you said?
Yeah, I was saying that, you know, it's a brand that's about these mundane moments, right? That where we walk, you know, in our day, where our feet can take us, as much as they are kind of the big dreamscape. Where might these shoes take me? It's sort of the both and of the here and now, be here now, and dream about where we're going.
I love that. And I want to get into that in the episode and figure out where your shoes have taken you and where they're going to take you. But first, a little bit more background, just because a few things caught my attention as I looked at other parts of your background. I think you said that you lived in East Bay. Is that right?
Yep. Most recently, Oakland. I was San Francisco for 15 years and then Oakland for the past few until now. I'm in Mexico.
Oh, very nice. I'll have to figure out what part of Mexico in a moment. I lived in Pleasanton for a few years with my family. Absolutely loved it. Just over the hill.
Yep. So, exactly. Yeah.
It's a wonderful area. What part of Mexico are you in now?
We're in San Miguel de Allende. Are you familiar?
No, I went to Cancun for a week this year. And other than that, I haven't spent much time in Mexico.
San Miguel is actually like the exact center of the country. So we're four hours kind of west, maybe southwest, northwest of Mexico City.
Okay. So it's not coastal.
Not coastal. Landlocked. Oh. Beautiful.
Okay.
High desert.
What's the elevation there?
Like, yeah, it's over 6,000 feet, almost seven.
Okay, because Mexico City's like seven or something, right?
Like 70, but yeah, Mexico City's a little higher than us.
Okay, and we're about 4,300 where I'm at here in Utah, but so you're up there.
Of course, yeah, we are.
Well, that's fantastic. The other thing I heard in some of your background was that you're maybe a soccer player, is that right? Little
how
football?
How did you get that? Yes.
I don't football. Know, I heard that somewhere.
It's funny because I would have said, well, I used to be, you know, growing up, I was a huge soccer player. But now in Mexico, we have a pickup game every Sunday. And it's with our kids. So it's parents and kids. I mean, parents who play, but some of them are, you know, we go kind of hard. So now I'm playing every week.
That's fantastic. Parents and kids. And is it outdoors? Is it on a cement? Because sometimes you're playing, I don't know what they call it in Mexico. In Peru, when I was there for a while, they called it fulbito.
Futbolito or something. No, yeah, it's grass. It's concha.
It's grass. Normal. Okay. Yeah. Oh, very nice. And what position do you like?
I mean, I used to play striker when I was young, but now, I mean, I guess I kind of try to hang up there so that I don't have to run as much with these young kids. I'm like, you guys stay in the midfield.
Oh, the typical striker.
Yeah,
you only
exactly.
run for the goal.
Exactly. I'm like, I can't play mid with these children. They have lungs like no other.
That's funny. Well, I haven't played for about a month and a half. I usually play two or three times a week with some friends. Also pick up futsal. I'm managing a broken foot today, so I will be back on the court in a few months.
From playing?
Yeah, it was actually, I mean, we might as well get it all out there. It was my brother who kicked me in the outside of the foot. It was not malicious, although I might pretend it is when I talk to him next time. And he just clipped me and broke my metatarsal, and now I've got a nice big pin, so it's not going to break again once it heals.
Wow, I'm sorry that happened.
You know, I miss it a lot, even for the 6 or 7 weeks it's been, but there are a lot worse things in life. So totally. I'm managing.
You'll be back.
Yep. So, well, good. That was just a couple of things that I that caught my attention. Yeah. And I thought, oh, I want to make sure that's out there.
Thank you. Yeah. So, I mean, the soccer was a part of my, you know, coming to this brand, right? Because I wore slides my whole childhood, right? You know, Adilette, the soccer slides, take your sweaty cleats off and slip your foot into a slide. So that was like, that started my love affair with this particular silhouette. And I always wondered, is it just me? Because I was like, loved soccer growing up, that I'm wondering why nobody has obsessed over perfecting this silhouette. And that was from my soccer days.
So was it like a pretty close connection, or was it more like reflecting back and all of a sudden you're like, wait a second, I love those slides. I want to wear slides, but maybe I'm not going to buy the Nikes or Adidas, you know, the, what are the customary black slides for post soccer?
Right. No, I mean, I think it was, look, in my day-to-day like wardrobe and my style, I really did appreciate a slide, and Birkenstocks were not my thing. They never really worked for my style or even felt super comfortable like everyone said they were. But then like the cheap rubber Adilette, I was like, hold on, I care more than this. So then I just started buying up all the different like designer slides that kind of wore that same vibe. But then I was like, these are uncomfortable and they're very expensive. So it was not like it wasn't necessarily a top of mind thing, but it was a lived experience that then when everything came to a head, I was like, look at the market, you know, we're perfecting the sneaker with new materials like wool, the flat, you know, we're knitting a flat, like where is the slide love, you know? And then it became more of like a market, you know, my investor brain turned on and it became more of like, what's the opportunity here?
I want to get to that moment. Let's back up a little bit though. Tell me what types of things you were doing before that moment hit where you said, I'm going to build a shoe company. I'm going to build a company that sells better slides. What led up to that?
Yeah. So my career, you know, I started kind of finance, typical like, you know, investment banking analyst. And I went to private equity. I was actually focused on healthcare, but that's sort of at the private equity firms where I realized I have a real affinity for consumer, you know, and I think I had resisted that for various reasons, but finally I just accepted like, no, I'm quite good at thinking through the consumer lens, and maybe it's because I shop a lot, but like, whatever, let's use what we got, you know? So I started to really fall in love with the consumer space and consumer brands. And then I went and I helped two founders build their consumer brand in the beauty space, sort of at like the height, or really kind of, we were early in the clean beauty movement. So I joined when we were very small, and then I helped them to scale. I ended up as the president and then CEO for a short while we recruited a new CEO, and I transitioned to a food brand at that point. So it was at the food brand that I was at for a short bit, super hyper growth that we were experiencing. And I had just had my daughter that I thought of Message.
Oh, okay. So you've done quite a bit then, from investment banking to clean beauty at
yep.
the front end of that wave, it sounds like. And
yep.
food,
yep.
What kind of food were you in?
Food was sauces and seasonings, CPG.
Okay.
So yeah, it was, I went from e-com in beauty to retail, right? Like we were highly distributed in the biggest big box retailers, Costco, Walmart, et cetera.
Okay. And then you're like, hey, what's next for me? Had a baby, your daughter.
Yep.
And then you're like, why not make shoes? Did you proactively search out an opportunity to make shoes? Or is it something that just kind of evolved and you're like, I think I'm feeling it. Mm-hmm. I think I want to get back into this.
I proactively avoided building a shoe brand because I knew enough to know that footwear is complicated. And I had been in the high margin, beautiful replenishment category of beauty. And I was like, why would I ever consider building a shoe brand where I've got, you know, sizes and SKU proliferation? Like, No, I resisted it for a long time. And I can joke about it from the, you know, kind of strategic and analytical lens, but I also was really nervous to start my own thing. I really think I started to identify as the person who supports other people in doing theirs. And so the leap to allowing myself as someone who was the sole provider financially for my family, and was not like, you know, a 19-year-old, you know, like college student, you know,
no
whatever.
Like, I feel like you have exactly,
you kind of have those like tropes of the entrepreneur, right? It's like either, oh, you have a backstop, you know, you've got some cash in the bank, let's see what you can do, or you're young and you're youthful and it doesn't matter. Like, I was
Nothing to lose. Yes,
I was not that. So I think I held a lot of judgment too. Am I allowed to do this? Is this safe? Is this even smart to do to my family, to my family, right? Versus for my family at that point, because it felt like a big risk. So yes, the journey to founding Message was a reluctant one on many fronts.
Did that hesitation come mostly because of the analytical background you had? You're like, I can run the numbers, I've seen the industry. Or was there something deeper there? You're like, because it sounds almost like you're saying, you know, give myself permission to do this. Sounds like it might be more than just numbers.
100%. More than numbers and both, right? Like, I often hear people, entrepreneurs, talk about how, and I've seen many entrepreneurs who really thrived not knowing what they didn't know. And I could understand that, because I was quite, I think at many moments in the journey to starting this, I felt a bit too eyes wide open, right? In terms of, you know, just some of the realities of what I was stepping into. But of course, it was more an emotional block of like, whew, you know, everything from ever since I was investing in founders. When I was at the private equity firm, we largely were investing in bootstrap entrepreneurs and who had done really, really well. And I immediately energetically felt and said many times to the people I worked most closely with, like, I'm supposed to be on the other side of the table. You know, I just knew it. I don't know how, I felt it. So I think, you know, whatever that was 15 years later or something, it was definitely a permission granting that I had to do to let myself step into the thing I had always felt or maybe dreamed about doing. You know, it was like, am I allowed to do this? Have I earned the right?
That seems counterintuitive. If you were already contemplating, or you kind of envisioned 15 years down the road, you know, sometime in the future, you're going to be here. What was holding you back? Like, what was it that said, no, you can't, or you shouldn't, or, I mean, is it just the responsibilities? Or something larger?
No, I think that's a great question. I think, have you ever gotten into the, who wrote the book? I mean, it's basically like upper limit thinking mentality, or the upper limit theory, which is essentially about how humans, you know, we evolved to kind of have our heads on the swivel, right? So it was not comfortable for us to be super comfortable. And so that we have this like upper limit of happiness is essentially the idea behind the theory.
Okay.
And I think
the thermometer, right? Like we get too high on, you know,
too high,
too far away from our comfort zone, and we pull back, whether that's too much success, too much failure. And we're like, it's easier right here.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Upper limit. And I think there was an element of that at play, which was like, since it was the thing I always knew that I was meant to do, wanted to do, fill in the blank, that felt like it was hitting up against my upper limit to actually do it.
You know, I call that, I work with a lot of innovators and inventors and people who are creating new things. And I call that one of the four fears of innovators. And it's the, you know, it's not the fear of failure. It's not the fear of theft or whatever. It's the fear of success. And it's like, what happens if this really does work? And I think it's going to, but when it does, like, what's it going to do to impact my family? And then how is that going to impact relationships? And what type of commitment do I have to make to actually like grow the thing properly the way it deserves to be grown if it is successful? Like, I think there's an aspect of that to all of us.
100%. And it's like, speaking of counterintuitive, you know, it's kind of counterintuitive, right? You're like, I'm taking the biggest risk. Of course, that's the thing I want, but it's also maybe the thing I'm most afraid of.
And that likely ties back into message, right? Like you've got a shoe brand, like I love the brand message because from a trademark standpoint, it makes a lot of sense if you're building long-term value in the brand. But it has nothing to do with, at least not on the surface, with shoes or slides. How did you land on that?
When I was building message, and we'll talk about this more, I'm sure, but we've already alluded to, like, it was quite the journey to get there. And that was a personal journey. That was a growth journey. And it just really landed for me that the messages we tell ourselves are the most important things we can tend to in this life. And, you know, pause on that. Messages, because those are our thoughts, right? And our thoughts become our feelings, and our feelings lead to action, and our action leads to outcome. And yeah, there was a long time when I was telling pretty limited messages to myself, you know? And so it just really resonated that, like, of course, this is starting from the ground up, you know, that I'm freeing my toes, you know, that's a very physical, literal interpretation. But this idea of really freeing myself, that comes from tending to these messages, and that I wanted to be both a founder and a brand whose purpose was not just comfort on our body, but comfort in our body, hence the messages.
Well, I think we're going to build up to this because I want to hear about building message, and maybe I jumped in a little too soon, but I love what you're doing. And the fact that you've got a message behind it, like, it kind of makes me think, is this like a Tom's? Like, Tom's has a cause behind it, right? Mm-hmm. And you buy a pair, they give a pair, all that stuff. Is that really prevalent in the industry? Like, is that easy to do as shoes? Why shoes?
Why shoes for the buy a pair, give a pair model?
Well, just like, or using shoes. Well, I guess I think a lot of people, a lot of shoe brands tend to carry a lot of weight to them, right? And so whether it's Tom's shoes saying, hey, you know, not only do we want to put shoes on your feet, we have a broader mission. And you saying, hey, like there's this whole deeper meaning to putting your feet into slides, exposing your toes, being mm-hmm. free to walk around. Where will your shoes take you? The message mm-hmm. behind those. Mm-hmm. I guess why do we have this deep connection to shoes? Is that a thing, or am
That's
I just making that up?
Question. No, it's an interesting observation. I mean, I think that there's a couple different ways to look at it, because with Tom's, like, they obviously had an interesting business model, you know, by the nature of their shoe, their silhouette, how it was made, you know, that enabled them to give purpose in the way of gifting shoes, right? And when I built Message, I was very clear, like, you know, both just the nature of how expensive it is for us to manufacture in Portugal, like that wasn't going to be baked into our business model. But I think it's an interesting, I mean, not overtly. I think what I knew is, given the message and the purpose and the mission behind this, of course, there's going to be a give back component. What is that going to look like? You know, and there's a lot of ways that I built the shoe itself to enable that, you know, from, like an environmental perspective. There are organizations I'm already talking with about doing cool things for them. So that's just because, duh, you know, we're a brand with heart, like we're going to do good things. But I think it's an interesting observation around people giving meaning to a shoe brand. And I like it because obviously I'm kind of a geek when it comes to feet, but, like, you know, our feet are literally our connectors to the earth. Right? There's whether or not where you sit on the spectrum of, like, you know, earthing and the science of what our body connecting to this planet, you know, can do, you know, for what's actually going on in our body, you know, and the transmission between the two spaces, whether or not you believe in that is a truth, right? Like, our feet are on the earth. And there's, when I started building this brand, I, like, chuckled, you know, someone who loves puns, how much we could just go to town, you know, with all of, like, you know, where your
feet. With all of the messages.
With all of the, exactly, you know, like what's the Lord of the Rings? Like, you have to be careful, you know, when you step out the door, you know, not to lose your feet, you know, like kind of, you never know where your feet are going to take you, right? The Frodo, like, and I just, there's so much in that, I think, because of this idea of like the spiritual nature of be here now, you know, of presencing, of earthing, of our feet and our connection and our, you know, what that does for our presence in our bodies actually being meaningful in terms of how we're carrying and running our energy, you know, in this world. Like I could go on about that forever, but, you know, might get too geeky, but I do think there's a there. So if brands are picking up on that, or if the consumer is, then I think that's great.
Yeah, that's, you're saying all of this. And I think it's reflecting back, and I'm literally sitting here saying to myself, I'm sitting in a boot right now with a broken foot. We just talked about it, and not being able to, you know, I've got a really good attitude about it, but it's not being able to run, not being able to play tennis or soccer or mountain bike or, you know, snowboard like I would normally do, except there's really no snow here this year in Utah to do a lot of that. Like, you're making me reflect on all of the movement and activities and relationship things that I do with people that I am not doing right now.
And yes.
So
that you know, literally your feet enable.
Literally.
You know?
Yep.
Yeah. Like literally and it's always both and with the feet. It's like your grounded energy enabling your feet and actually where they are and how they're moving enabling, you know, it's the.
No, there's maybe a whole episode there for.
I know.
Power of feet and movement. But I want to hear, what were some of the things when you started Message, what were some of the skills that you brought into Message?
I love that question because I think it actually relates to the hesitation to build Message question. Because when I started Message, I really identified with, of course, all of my finance and analytical background, right? Which then took me to be a pretty dangerous paid marketer, right? Because it turned out, oh, now we're in this e-commerce world where I can make the most amount of money from these platforms where understanding dollars, unit economics, you know, all of the stats that go into that is really beneficial. So, and then I really am a systems thinker. So operationally, like I was very strong thinking about scaled systems, then executing, you know, into that. Like I really enjoyed what I never had or held in the businesses that I had supported in the past was the creative side. And I had actually worked with people who were like, you are such a badass. And I'm so grateful that you're not a creative, or else you would go and do your own thing.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
It was like, yes. I'm so glad you have a gap in your skill set. Otherwise,
I'm so glad. Exactly.
Eso.
Oh. Like, I'm so glad that you're, and by the way, we're all creative.
I'm sorry. Did I just hear an eso?
Yes. Mexico. Yeah, Mexico.
Yes.
Yeah. And I mean, so many things to say about that, right? Because while we could sit there and be like, everyone is creative, come on. I mean, it really sat with me, right? And there wasn't a lot that I could look at in terms of what I had done up to that point that validated the idea that I was a creative, you know? I started to like engage with that very old book, The Artist Way. I mean, Rick Rubin, you know, his latest like modern version of that. And I felt it in my heart, but in terms of my output, that wasn't my genius up to that point. And so that was a real fear of mine, which it turns out when you birth a brand that you care about and that mattered to you and that came to you in your dreams and you couldn't get away from, like, there is no world that you can't bring the creative energy to that one needs. But I think what I had really brought was a lot of strategy and, you know, just a lot of the pieces in place to execute. You know, it's not hard for me to look at the numbers and say, my goodness, we need to start shipping these things since we have to air out of Portugal. We got to get them out of shoeboxes because I can't afford that. Like, that's very natural to me. It was not very natural to say, you know, here is how I want this to look and feel. It's in my brain. I know the world, but here's how we're going to put that into every touch point of this brand.
Well, so where were you, what was the status of the business, or where was it at when you finally said to yourself, you know what, I'm not just an analytical operator, I'm actually doing the full thing, the full skill set. I'm a creative too. I'm a fully skilled entrepreneur. Did you have a team? Were you leading a team? Like, or was this early in this in the kind of the formation and development of the company, or was this take a while?
It was fully in the like pre-launch ideation. I really saw like, oh, this is what I'm meant to be doing. It was coming really naturally to me with the right people on board, right? I was really quickly learning, okay, how my creative is translated is with someone who has this skill set, right? Like all the things we know we could talk about forever, but how the strength of just knowing what you should not be doing. And I was lucky enough at that point to have some folks from my network come around it who were just so special and helped me to birth it. But I really saw that I had the capacity to find those people, give them the direction we needed, encourage them, challenge them. It wasn't easy. If I had money, I think I could have kept a lot of them around for longer. You know, it was not easy to kind of have to then resource it yourself in kind of scrappy ways. But yeah, it was, the pre-launch was so fun. I've heard some entrepreneurs say that, and I'm like, if you know, you know, kind of thing, you know, it's like before you put the baby out in the world, I'm sure there's some good like infant metaphor there, but ooh, it's just so juicy, you know?
Well, how did that go for you then? Like, how did you go from the pre-launch? Did it go well? And did you know like early on that, hey, this is going to work? Was it like, how did you get your, well, to put another metaphor in place, how did you know when you hit your stride?
Oh, yes. We're going to get all the puns going. You know, we launched April 5th of 2023. And the launch article was a Fast Company article that said the Birkenstock for athleisure ? And it went from there. And I was really prepared for, you know, I was very eyes wide open about just because you built it doesn't mean they come, you know? And as I alluded,
so you were ready for building. You were ready for.
I was ready for
persevering.
Yeah, super slow, but like, well, here's going to be the interesting piece. So I was ready for it to be slow, but then I believed that with some data points that we were going to get over, you know, probably the first quarter to first half of our year, that I would be able to bring in interesting money, interesting meaning aligned. Capital in order to resource us to grow thoughtfully. So not let's raise a big, you know, big round. But again, we launched April 5th of 2023. And to ground people in that time, there had been some very big e-commerce IPO flops. Like nobody wanted to look at consumer. And so I was both surprised by the product market fit that was validated immediately. I knew this customer. I knew she did not want to buy another Birkenstock. I knew she wanted to be wearing something different than her neighbor. I knew she was spending money on her athleisure outfit and that what she was putting on her feet to run out the door, or, you know, maybe having to lace up on her feet to run out the door to then take off to do the thing she was going to, was not like bringing her joy, was not comfortable on her feet, wasn't wonderful for her wardrobe, right? I just knew. I didn't know that it was going to be reflected back to me as quickly as it was, but then I also didn't know that no investor was going to care.
Yeah. Because that's a whole different problem. I mean, it's an awesome, awesome surprise that your brand takes off quickly, and then a shock to the system when investor interest doesn't follow on just as quickly, right?
Right. Like, oh, that's great. Talk to me when you're 5 million. It's like, great. The path from here to there as an inventory consumer brand is...
Yeah, it's just cash. I mean, just the cash flow issues of keeping inventory in stock at the right levels at the right time, especially for e-commerce brands, like that in and of itself is maybe the biggest puzzle to success, right?
100%. So, I mean, right now, yes, you know?
Yeah. Well, so it took off. I'm curious, and you're seeing some success. How did you manage the investment or lack of investment issues? Did it change your strategy that you had envisioned? And if so, how?
Not quickly enough. It did not change my strategy quickly enough. You know, that I can reflect on and say, I was a little, in hindsight, I can say I was kind of stubborn. I was feeling like a bit of a chip. I was like, this is bullshit. Like, I've ran other consumer brands and I haven't seen some of these numbers. And so it was like the should, you know, instead of what was happening. When I finally softened into the reality at hand and took much of the business on, you know, for myself, my partner came in and started helping me. That's a whole nother story. That works great for some people. It was not the thing for us, but we were like, you know, willing to do anything. Yeah, I had to kind of hard pivot and totally change how I thought about the people part of the business, how I thought about supporting my genius, but very minimally across each of the fronts I needed to be supported on because I didn't have the resources really to do it. So
where was the business at this time when you were making this pivot?
In our first full year of operations, we did just over 1 million top line. And even by then, so it was like 1.3 I closed that first year at. Even by then, I was having to like insource everything. I had had a PR agency out of the gate, no PR. You know, I just couldn't afford it. And it's so crazy, yeah. Jeff, because it's like, it worked so well. I've never seen PR convert like it was converting for us. You know, people say, oh, it's top of funnel. No, not for us. It was a converter because our customer's looking, you know? So it was crushing and it was hard and it still is, honestly. You know, I'm right now, we'll kick off our big kind of spring summer season starts kind of mid-March is really when things start to take off. And in the past, I've just sold out within the first couple months of our peak season. And so I can't really figure out where the top is. And this year I tried to be aggressive and buy into more inventory, but it's just so hard, you know, with working cap. And so it remains tough, but now I've been in it enough to know when we're crushing, cash is rough. When we're not crushing as hard because we're out of season or whatever, cash is tough. So cash is tough is actually not the problem. It's the reality. And now how do we move, you know, within that reality? But yeah, it's an interesting one because I have friends who raised like just before the markets really kind of tightened with respect to consumer. And I wonder sometimes like just what, and I'm grateful for the journey that it's been and what it's forced me into and what I know it will mean for the longevity, for the autonomy of our business, you know, perhaps the best forcing function ever, you know, in a few years we'll be talking and reflecting and laughing about that. But sometimes I find myself just, oh, what would it be like if I had some cash? Well, I know the answer. That's how I've built other brands, you know? So it's real. It's real.
Yeah, they say creativity loves constraints. I'm sure you've got some totally huge opportunities here.
Totally.
With some cash constraints.
Accurate.
What did this do to the way you thought about the business? As you're saying to yourself, man, big launch, surprise. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No investors. Oh, surprise. Reconfiguring the business to meet the cash needs, trying to, you know, hit the seasonal cycles. And like, how is your thinking about the business and about leading the business in particular changed as you've run into these constraints?
Well, actually, it's so fun to have these conversations where you find yourself circling on a theme, right? This is sort of what I was alluding to before when I said it's the thing that you know and you say, but you don't necessarily do, right? That's what I was saying in our like pre-chat regarding whatever space and empty time, you know, for thinking. With this, it was really like cash is flipping king. I have told people, so many people, that from the investor seat. I've encouraged that from the presidency. And here I am as a founder pushing top line growth, thinking about my margin profile and how I'll be sustainably profitable when, and look at how many people want this. And so I can get there in 12 months, let's just go. And it's like, Meg.
The vanity metrics, the growth metrics that aren't necessarily the same as unit economics, right?
Totally. And again, I and maybe this is me like, whatever, fooling myself into that thinking, but I was doing it from a place of, you know, top line, but with a margin, you know, knowing my margins and thinking about sustainable bottom line, but cash, working cap, different question now, you know? So yeah, that's really what I'm stepping into this year with, which is like, maybe it's painful to leave something on the table, but cash is king. And that's what gives me the autonomy to keep doing this. And I also have so much more just belief and faith in seeing how people have come into this business at the right time, that the same is going to happen with respect to capital, whether or not that be bank finance, whether that be equity. Like, it's not a fear, graspy feeling anymore. It's a, okay, I just want to make it as enjoyable to get to that point as possible. And when I'm constantly sweating cash, you know, in the bank every month, less fun.
Yeah. Well, tell me, because it seems like there's a lot of tensions in our discussion, in the sense that, you know, something is happening one way, the great launch, but the lack of investment capital. I mean, these tensions just show up, and they're themes in our businesses and our lives, even, I guess. You're describing one that has me really intrigued, and that is, you know, there is friction and pressure in your business because of all the factors, right? But you're describing to me, it sounds like about the same time that that's happening, you're starting to learn the autonomy, or the, I don't know, is it self-care? Is it, you know, the earth grounding? Like, were these things actually happening around the same time, or were they related if they were?
This is where your question about, you know, how has your confidence changed or grown? You know, and I said everywhere, every day, it's this. It's because the answer is one is necessary for the other. I wouldn't be able to still be here talking to you after everything. And I think this is often the story with many entrepreneurs. I don't think I'm unique. But after everything I described, if I wasn't able to both find the deep gratitude and the lessons that my business has been serving me up, the life lessons, right, on this journey, if I didn't find that as like, what a flipping gift, and if I didn't allow that, if I didn't sit in the presence and the awareness for that muscle to build, okay, I'm figuring this, I'm learning, okay, this isn't the end of the world, we got that, you know, then I would have peaced out.
I don't think everybody would respond that way. Like, it sounds like what you're describing is like literally refiner's fire, or the pressure. And you're coming out of this pressure saying, hey, this is actually making me better. And I'm going to be fine. And I'll, yep. Not everybody does that. Some people don't take that perspective, right? What is it about you? Because you said early on that you were like hesitant, you know, to really come into this and I guess really follow what you thought was maybe your destiny in a way. And now that you have, and it's not going quite right, instead of saying, maybe this isn't my destiny, maybe I mistook what I thought was going to happen, you're saying, no, this is like, this is who I am and I love it. Maybe not all the problems, but I love where I'm at now. That's unique. That's people probably tell you this all the time, but that seems like a really deep quality that other people could really benefit from.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, I do often hear people, they kind of package it or reflect it back in different ways, but it's something around this idea that I think it's different than the growth mindset, but it is this idea that like, I just relish growth in this lifetime. And so if that's served up for me through strife, you know, and difficult circumstance, but same, like I believe with, you know, surrender and trust, like ultimately we're going to pop through the other side and always, always stronger when we do. Back to Spanish, you know, I love certain phrases just are better in other languages, you know, vale la pena, like it's worth it, you know,
it's worth the pain.
It's right. Like my capacity for joy, my just like ability to be in deep gratitude is so beyond where I even was 2 years ago. And if you looked at my bank account, you'd be like, girl, impressive, you know, because we pushed it to the edge. And the things I used to think gave me peace and security are now things that I don't have in this moment, but I have a muscle that those things would never have gotten me, which is despite what that account looks like, I just feel like I have such deep, I don't know, love for this life, I guess.
Is this an influence on moving? I mean, does part of this play into why you moved to Mexico? And like, is that because you've got all this forcing function with your business, no easy task to navigate that. Even on good days, there's lots of pressure. And when there are struggles, even more pressure. And you're like, okay, well, maybe we should move to a new country. And had you lived in Mexico before? Or?
No.
You guys just
said, we were Bay Area, like almost 20 years. And it was 100% a forcing function. I had two kids in private school and I had a mortgage in the Bay and I was no longer taking a salary.
So you said, well, where can we go and keep the business?
And I got to a point where I felt like I was drowning. I felt really scared. I felt like I was going to fail my family. And then I somehow, you know, whatever, the universe, I availed myself of the idea that this could be possible. And San Miguel kind of dropped into our orbit. And the craziest thing, Jeff, is that I found in a journal, I had seen a Condé Nast article that called San Miguel the top city in the world. And I had written a journal entry, what do I have to achieve in life in order to be able to live there?
A journal, like how long ago?
Like a private journal 5 years before then. Before really? I launched Message, before I anything, I was dreaming and scheming about what liquidity from what equity I was going to need to like whatever in order to up and go to this magical wonderland. And the thing that got me there was the opposite.
Putting
everything into my business, everything on the line, and then being like, oh no, can I afford private school in the Bay for my children? I mean, this is the trip of life, right?
Well, I think many of us right in this moment are saying, what else were in those journals? Like this stuff, you seem to have this idea 15 years ahead or 5 years ahead. We would all like to know what else should we know from your premonitions that you've had.
So. Well, I mean, the beautiful thing, I don't know, you know, where we're going to close, but like, I actually think the really beautiful thing is that we all have that. You know, if we slow down enough to listen or to document, to write, whatever, like I really think that our innate knowing is so, so potent and that often we're moving too fast or we're not listening close enough. But when we do, it's right there.
That's powerful. Well, and on that note, where do you think Message is headed in the next 3 to 5 years? And it may not be like, you might have visions for it and it may or may not go that direction. There's a lot of factors, but where would you like to see it be 5 years from now?
Yeah. Message 5 years from now, I really think, you know, it's an international brand. I think we go international earlier than most brands would, for various reasons, you know, we don't have to get into, but there's the, like, you know, the analytical that makes sense in that. And then there's just this idea of where I am living now, where we're based, how we're going to start to bring the Message world to life. We produce in Portugal, you know, it's going to really be kind of through this lens of, celebrating these incredible destinations, you know, where we are birthed and housed, but then also where the consumer can go and explore. So I think, you know, we will be an international brand. In a couple of years, we'll be a brand that is more prominent in wholesale. So people in the US will be able to find us in a few locations offline, which is cool. People will be able to touch and feel, you know, majority of our sales right now are online. For a shoe that when people put it on, they're like, whoa, this feels different. This is like a hug, you know? So wholesale, you know, we'll be able to touch and feel the consumer more. And I really think in the next couple of years, people, the consumers, we already have many happy consumers on a small scale, but I think they are going to understand why we're called Message. And I think in understanding that is where the message is going to get shared and where we're going to start to really build this world. Because I do think that brand is meaning. It's one and the same. And right now we have an amazing product that we've marketed and we haven't had a brand that we've shared. And I think when we do, and when we showcase what this, you know, literally looks like in your life, moving through the places and spaces and how comfortable it is and how it uplifts your wardrobe and it looks better and it feels better, like, it's a no-brainer. It's fire. So in 5 years, I think you're going to see people around Utah in their messages. And you're going to be like, I talked to that chick 5 years ago and she was cool. Yep, yeah. You know?
I love it. I love it. And maybe I'll see it in Costco. You said you had done other brands with Costco, right? And I think if I'm not mistaken, I just saw, was there a Nike shoe, Nike Kirkland?
What?
Co-branding happening.
No.
I literally saw this like just yesterday or today. These days, I don't know if it's AI or something else. You have to look
it
up.
Right. Is it real? I don't think Costco will be our, I think, I mean, as early as this year, actually, I don't even know if I can say this, but we're going to, Nordstrom just picked us up, which is fun. Like we've been very, very selective about wholesale because it, as you know, it's a different business really. And we're so under-resourced, but, I don't think Costco will be the first kind of big format place, but I think it'll be probably somewhere with like an outdoorsy cool, you know, bend. I think there'll be more collaborations with other brands. That is where a lot of people find us. You know, Message is just like a sexier slide. And so a lot of brands that don't touch shoes want to get involved, which is cool.
I love that. I'll be excited to see where this goes for you and for the brand.
Yeah. So,
and on that note, what is a message that you would leave for people like you building brands, building companies, launching products? What would you tell them if they're a little bit behind you, either in the process of their business or maybe in their attitude towards the constraints they're running up against?
Feel free to listen to your knowing, you know, and yours alone. I think it's so important to take in those outside experts, perspectives, what have you, but really metabolizing that and landing in your own truth, because nobody is going to be able to hold the belief to build this business besides you. So you got to get real clear on what that is, where that lands. And if it's not, that's okay too, right? But if it is, then perceived problems are not problems. They're opportunities for learning, for, you know, pivots, and just keep coming back to that knowing that says, oh yeah, this is the thing. This is on track, even if it doesn't look like it, or this is what I'm supposed to be doing, or shit, I launched a brand and this isn't it. both of those equally valid. Just listen.
Yeah. I love that. I love that so much. And the only last thing I would add is I hope on this upcoming Sunday, you'll go and you'll score a goal or two and think, okay, that's for Jeff because he can't run right now. I just scored a goal for Jeff. So.
Oh, Jeff, I so will. And if you please, I mean, send me some, I would love to get you some slides.
Oh, that sounds phenomenal. Something hugging, yeah, you said something about hugging your feet.
I'm not kidding when I tell you my girlfriend was here in Mexico. She broke her toe. She liked her message slides, but she didn't wear them like everywhere in her life. You know, she wore them, you know, the ins and outs and all around. She won't go anywhere without them now because post toe break, she was like, this is the only shoe I can wear. Molds to your feet. She was like, I get it. It was a really cool, like close consumer case study for me, but it was after her break. So let's get you a pair and see what you think.
I would love it. They're going to have to compete against my Ultra Smart Wool collaborative shoes I just bought. I only get to wear one of them ever right now, but
right. But no, well, this will be your slide version.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Megan, it's been so much fun having you on the show.
Good to meet you, Jeff. Yeah.
You've got such a cool journey. And I think in addition to the journey you've been on, the perspective you have about your journey is just as important. So thank you for sharing that.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. And thanks to our audience for joining us again on the Breakout CEO podcast. Be sure to follow or subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And if you enjoy the show, a rating or a review goes a long way. Our mission is to promote the stories of breakout CEOs in scaling SaaS, e-commerce, and tech companies to equip peer CEOs with valuable perspectives and confidence. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of The Breakout CEO. I'm Jeff Holman, and I'll see you next time.